I anticipated.
Me too.
Okay.
Oh, the web.
Try that again. We will call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Thursday, March 19th, 2009. We have four bills posted for public hearing. Committee members, these bills are here for us to understand the bills, have the advocates have an opportunity to explain why they brought these bills. Here's some different perspective on it, and we will use that information to gauge the committee's interest in moving forward with the bills. There's more interest in some of these bills than I had anticipated, so we will be sticking pretty strictly to the time limits in order to give as many people who are interested in testifying an opportunity to do so today. Ms. Ross will be our timekeeper, and she will give you a notice when you've got 30 seconds left so that you can wrap up your thoughts. Let's begin by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2879. Ms. Ross, brief summary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. 2879 makes immune from liability landowners that allow access across their lands for the public to reach adjacent properties for the purpose of recreation, wood cutting, or harvest of special wood products, provides signage and notice requirements to prohibit specific activities, and allows landowners to receive up to $1,000 in liquidated damages from persons who remain and engage in the prohibited activity.
You're a bit ahead of me. Thank you. Public testimony. I would like to call to the witness table Mark Landauer, Steve Johnson, and Brian Dretke. Those are the only people I've got signed up to testify. Thanks. Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mark Landauer with the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Thank you for hearing this bill today. In the interest of time and your admonishment, I will try to make this very brief, and that's why I was a bit ahead of you. My apologies.
Good for you.
Under House Bill 2879 reestablishes what has been considered a 40-year protection to landowners by clarifying that land used for access to places where people intend to recreate is covered by immunity granted under ORS 105682. It further clarifies that the definition of an owner includes easement holders or rights of way holders. Under current statute, the legislature has declared it to be a public policy of the state of Oregon to encourage owners of land to make their land available to the public, and in order to entice landowners to open this land, the legislature has limited the liability from personal injury, death, or property damages under ORS 105682. Recreational purposes are defined as outdoor activities such as hunting, fishing, swimming, boating. There is a rather long list. However, in 2006, the Supreme Court overturned the Tillamook County Circuit Court as well as the Court of Appeals and eliminated what had been believed to be immunity granted to landowners, whether public or private, who permit people to cross their land in order to gain access to land for recreational purposes. Specifically, the court ruled that recreational purposes does not include crossing one person's land to gain access to another person's land for recreational to recreate there. However, the court also acknowledged that there was legislative history to indicate that the legislature was aware at the time of the original passage of this statute that there were those who believed that the act provided immunity to lands used to gain access to recreational lands. Because the definition of recreational purposes is rather broad and includes the phrase includes but not is not limited to, the question before you today is whether access to a parcel of land owned by an individual or the public for the purposes of gaining entry to another parcel of land in order to recreate is a recreational purpose. We believe that the policy of the state and the legislative history suggests that access to adjoining land was intended to be covered. Without this important clarification, landowners, whether public or private, from across the strait may be inclined to reevaluate whether they ought to make their lands open to the public in order to avoid exposure from litigation, thereby undermining the policy of the state of Oregon to encourage owners of land to make their lands available to the public for recreational purposes.
Mr. Landau.
I thank you for your generosity. And I would like to introduce Steve Johnson. He's the district manager from the Central Oregon Irrigation District, who would like to make a few comments as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As Mark mentioned, manager Central Oregon Irrigation District. District is rather large, main canals with accompanying ditch roads running through the cities of Bend and Redmond. We've had arrangement and agreement with both cities and the park districts to do the cooperative nature that our ditch roads can be shared and access provided for trails. And it was always under the understanding that with existing statute that liability didn't exist just for having a trail on our ditch road. So when the Oregon Supreme Court decision came down in 06, then it's raising concern that if the definition we've had added to the bill, the clarification of holder of easement or right-of-way is defined as owner for the sake of no liability, that's the clarification that we'd like to pursue. If it isn't clarified, then we're going to be able to no longer be able to provide this relationship for trails on our ditch road because of the exposure to liability.
Thank you. And before I go to our next witness, I neglected to remind anyone who comes to testify to please begin by giving us your name and either the organization you're representing or, if you are here individually, your county of residence. And also, just a forewarning, we have a protocol here in the legislature that when legislators come to give testimony on bills that they are sponsoring that we are hearing, since they are usually coming from work in another committee, we do allow them to jump to the front of the line. So if you see that happen, the reason for that is that we're drawing them out of other work that they're doing on your behalf. Mr. Dretke.
Thank you. My name is Brian Dretke, and I'm with OTLA. I thank the committee and the chair for allowing me to testify here today. I'm a practicing lawyer over in Pendleton. I practice mostly over the eastern part of the state, and I drove here today for this hearing. When I'm not working, I spend an awful lot of time on a lot of these places open to the public, running and biking as well. You know, the original intent of extending immunity to private landowners against public recreational users was to strike a balance. And so the law says that private landowners who choose to open their property and allow people to come on and use it recreationally, they get the benefit of the immunities provided under ORS 105-682. And the public, in turn, gets the benefit of going on and doing what they want to do, snowmobiling, picking mushrooms, running, biking, whatever. In other words, the statute was adopted to encourage owners to open their land and to provide them the protections that they do. But what this bill does, HB 2879, it would change that balance by extending immunity to any property that may be crossed in order to recreate. And if this bill is passed, it would mean essentially that landowners who have not opened their property to the public would be granted the same immunity as the people who have opened their land to the public. So besides watering down the original purpose of the law, this would grant immunity to even irresponsible landowners who don't maintain or create dangerous conditions like poorly maintained trails, poorly maintained guardrails, sidewalks, things of that nature. And this bill, in essence, would provide rights to some and take rights from others. For example, if a professional photographer crosses a piece of property contiguous to open land and in order to take photographs for her work, she would have a right because she's not crossing for recreational purposes. However, if another person did the same thing, but they were going over to, for a picnic, they would have their right taken away. And that's what the problem with this bill is. It's not good public policy, and it's beyond the intent of the original act. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Questions for this panel?
Yes.
Representative Winger.
Yes.
Madam Chair. Brian, if you don't mind, I read your letter, and I want to understand this example that you're talking about. So a person who's illegally crossing somebody's land, whether she's a professional photographer or somebody who wants to picnic, has a right of action if they injure themselves on that land?
There's a lot of things involved in that, but it has to do with certain immunities and certain responsibilities toward even trespassers, whether they be cognizant of it or inadvertent.
Follow up. Help me out here. Because you're the lawyer, and I've never been involved in this issue. So when somebody's trespassing on your land and injures themselves, they can sue you because you didn't maintain the trail you might have had for yourself or guardrail or whatever you had there. They're a trespasser, and they have a right of action in court against you for the injury they suffered on your land?
In certain instances, they do.
Well, I'm hard pressed to support that in any way.
Well, I can appreciate that, and I can get you more. If you want to send me questions, or if you want to meet you afterward and take more questions, I can get back any information you'd like to have on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions, Representative Clem?
I think what we're trying to get at, if the bill's not written this way, my question is, are you willing to help write it this way? The question is, if you owned a private piece of land and let someone come on it and go hunting and you don't charge them, then you're immune. And if you instead let them walk through it to go hunting on a piece of public land on the other side, I'd like them to still be immune.
Well, and that's a good point, because if you're allowing them, then you're opening your property to the public. And then you do have the immunities. It's only when there's a closed piece of property and someone goes across it. See, this is for if you cross...
We need the bill for that. So, I'm sorry, just to follow up, so you're saying that's already currently legal under existing law?
If you're opening your property to allow people to cross, if you're opening your property to allow people to cross for recreational purposes, you have the immunity.
Oh, we're going to have to. We had shaking and nodding all over the place. I think that's what we got to figure out, because that's what the bill is designed to do. I'm not saying that's what the bill says. The philosophy behind the bill is to try and not have gates thrown up to get into public land. And if the bill's not written that way, then I think need to figure that part out.
Certainly be willing to help work to help craft that.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you. I have no one else signed up to testify on this bill. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on House Bill 2879? Mr. Riggs.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs. I was in another hearing, so I didn't get here in time to sign up. I'm not going to spend much time. I will pass on a one-pager from the City of Redmond, and I think this is a very good example. The City of Redmond has spent the last 25 years acquiring property in the dry canyon of Redmond, turning it into a park, and they're very concerned that the effect of the appeals court and Supreme Court decision will force owners of property along the parkland in the canyon to put up fences to prohibit people from inadvertently stepping onto their property, becoming injured, and then facing some liability. So I will leave you a one-pager. We are certainly happy to sit down in a work group, but this is a problem statewide, and it's something that I think has unintended consequences. So I'll be very brief. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, anyone? Great. Thanks. Last call. Testimony on House Bill 2879. We'll close that public hearing. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2898. I have one person signed up to testify on this bill, Ralph Saperstein.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Ralph Saperstein.
I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and my role was going to be to introduce an OSWA member who was on her way down but has a family emergency and was called back home up in Warren, and so she won't be able to make it. So I'm going to do the best I can.
Okay.
The purpose of House Bill 2898 is to give equity to small forest landowners so that they could provide informal building structures on their land, just as agricultural land allows, so that they could better manage their forest land. And that's all this does, is allow a pole building or similar structure to be used in the management of forest land. You could think of forest as a different type of agricultural product. And right now, you can do that on ag lands, but you cannot do it on forest lands. And so these are just an informal building that would help in the management of these lands. It's a service building on lands that are currently zoned for forests is all that's being asked.
Okay.
Minor change.
Great. Thanks. Any questions for Mr. Saperstein, Representative Esquivel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who cares if you put a pole building? I mean, I'm astounded that you can't do that.
That would indicate that a committee member would be supportive of this. You said that's the purpose of the... Madam Chair, I don't get it. I would agree with Representative Esquivel that the problem is counties regulate that, and they have a very strict permitting and fee process that makes it very expensive and time consuming to put up an informal building.
Money.
Any other questions for Mr. Saperstein? I think you can tell
you got one vote.
Your associate.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you. Anyone else to testify on House Bill 2898? Okay, we're making some progress here. We'll close that public hearing. I think things start to get interesting now. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2946. Ms. Ross, I didn't give you that chance the last time. Sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. This measure requires land use planning for public school facilities in conformity with statewide land use policy via amendment of statewide land use planning goals by the Land Conservation and Development Commission within a year of the date of passage.
Okay, thank you.
Do we need to summon Representative Bailey? Is he here? I think we need to summon.
Mr. Hoyt is doing that.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, we got to him a little quicker. Did you want to start? Or?
I can.
Okay.
I can start from here.
Do from the dais.
Yep.
Representative Klein is one of the sponsors of this bill.
And I'm certain we have others who can speak more eloquently to the bill. The issue involved here is the planning for schools, and is it something that occurs sort of piecemeal with the school board, for example, kind of looking at school facility purchase and siting. Right now, here in Salem-Keizer School District, we just passed the largest bond in the state's history, and we're talking about how to replace those schools for, I believe, that we're going to build and a lot of repair and renovation. This is a concept that says let's have that tied in not with just the school board doing that planning and hopefully consulting with other units of government like the city in a formal or in an informal manner. Let's actually build it into our planning to say that schools are part of infrastructure. They're part of our community. They have to be thought about. The reason I like it in particular is that in that planning, we will help address other issues like childhood obesity, safe routes to schools. These are all things that we've had other bills dealing with. A lot of that gets dealt with right off the bat. If you plan schools that are able to be within communities, it also helps the other half of my brain say, let's make sure they are in communities, not pushed out onto farmland, where then you've got higher transportation costs, more road miles, again, kids not walking or riding their bikes to school, but instead being driven by either bus or parents. So the fundamental question, you know, if you look at these things, is what is the right way to plan for school locations and school siting? And I would argue that the current system in some places isn't as strong as it could be because it's isolated and fragmented, where it might be a school board doing it without the benefit of having essentially the overall land use planning process factor schools in.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I have the honor of representing House District 42, Inner East Side, Portland. And it is my pleasure today to testify on behalf of House Bill 2946. I unfortunately was not here for the beginning of Representative Clem's testimony, so I may repeat a few things that he has already said, and I ask your indulgence. To me, House Bill 2946 is about building 21st century schools and about acknowledging the vital role that schools play in our community, both in urban communities and in rural communities. I'm sure many of you have heard, like I have, that the majority of our budget as a state is spent on educating, incarcerating, and medicating. And I think this bill helps with all three. We're going to help educate our students. We're going to make sure they're integrated into a society. We're making sure they have a healthy lifestyle. And we're working on programs that help build model citizens, that help them to be more productive members of society in the future. We spend a lot of our time here in the legislature planning and thinking about education. And I think it's time that we now shift to thinking about them in terms of how they fit into our physical environment as well. We have to educate their minds, and we have to think about the places in which those minds are educated. To me, House Bill 2946 takes a step in the direction to declare that we believe that schools are part of our critical infrastructure and that they are a necessary part of any kind of comprehensive planning that our local communities do. I understand there have been some concerns with the cost of the bill, and I expect a discussion on that and look forward to hearing ideas and suggestions. In my opinion, House Bill 2946 sets forward a principle, and we as a state spend a large amount of money on making sure that our children have a bright future, and we spend a lot of time thinking about other kinds of important infrastructure, and I think it's time that we now marry those two things. So I appreciate your time. I know you have a lot of testimony today, so I'll try to be brief.
Any questions of the two sponsors? Appreciate your taking time to come and help
Thank
us
you,
understand
Chair.
This bill.
With Thank the you. Committee's indulgence, I'm in a work session in another committee.
Understood. So and I've explained that to the other people who are here to testify.
Thank you.
I do have several people signed up to testify on this bill. I will call you forward in groups of three, starting with Gil Kelly, Andy Miller, and Art Slack. Following that, so you know to be ready, Linda Ludwig, Bill Blosser, and Katrina Hedberg. Mr. Kelly, hello.
Hi. Chair Nolan, members of the committee, I'm Gil Kelly, an urban planner based in Portland, and I have the pleasure today of representing the Center for Innovative School Facilities, which during the fall and summer of last year actually convened a fairly broad group of stakeholders from around the state, school districts, private interests, developers, community and educational activists, sustainable building experts, and so forth, to really wrestle with this notion about whether we are building the best schools for this century, for our children and for coming generations. And the bill that's in front of you today, which, by the way, has there were amendments that were published this morning from Representative Bailey's office. I think those are in front of you. If they're not, let me just speak briefly to say that they only amend the goals and purposes portion. They don't change any of the substantive requirements. They simply just make clear what our broad set of goals and policies are. So this group was extremely helpful in preparing ideas that were then sponsored by the two representatives you heard from this afternoon, and we're very thankful for their help and support and guidance. In a nutshell, this would bring school facilities into the framework of statewide land use planning and call them out essentially as a public facility, public schools, that is. And for that reason, there would be a requirement for early consultation and planning on the part of school districts and localities. And we think that's a very good thing for the long term. Our objective here is to see that we build community-based schools that serve neighborhoods in the heart of the neighborhoods, that reduce transportation costs over the long term, and are built in a way which fosters community and fosters a better sense of learning. So I wouldn't have much to add to the eloquence of the two representatives who spoke before me, except that we have a very broad base of support for this. We did find one example in Bend, for example, during our process where the school districts and cities work very cooperative together. In fact, in many ways, while they said we don't really need this to do our best work, we think really kind of encoding that model for the rest of the state is a very healthy way to go. Thank you.
Your timing is excellent. Thank you.
On the money.
Ms. Miller.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Andy Miller. I'm senior policy analyst for Oregon Business Association. You may wonder why the Oregon Business Association has an interest in this particular bill. We do our policy work by committees. And in our education committee, this is one of the issues that bubbled up. And it came largely from suburban school districts where the choices of where the schools are located seem to be random and not altogether in the best interest of the student. So we are just at the point of studying this issue, so I can't add any really substantive things. But I do have a couple things that I do know from my other work. And you'll pardon me if I have to segue a little bit into the healthcare area. The recommendations of the obesity report sponsored by the Health Policy Commission showed that schools should be sited when possible to allow children to walk or bike to school. This was one of their primary recommendations, just something else to consider along with the other land use considerations. And those would be schools sited within communities, raise property values of homes, and that will generate more revenue. And schools sited within communities allow for innovative mixed shared use designs, and that gets more bang for your buck out of the school building. And we will continue to study this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Slack.
Chair Nolan and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And this bill is another one that is well-intended. But I'm afraid there may be maybe some intended, maybe some unintended consequences at this point. Currently, the requirements for the responsibility for siting schools are with school districts. They're not with local government. They're not with counties. They're not, I don't believe they're with cities either. We have a coordination kind of activity that goes on between school districts and their planning and the land use authorities and their work at this point. This bill shifts the responsibility of the siting of schools to local government as part of the comprehensive plan. This is something heretofore that we have not undertaken, that we've relied on the coordination with the schools to do this activity. Unfortunately, because of the fact that this would be a new requirement, we're looking at a fairly large fiscal. And I would dare say that we're looking at probably $100,000 to $300,000 a county, depending on where you are in the state, to undertake this kind of responsibility at this point. That's not to say that we shouldn't do more with regard to the siting of schools and the coordination of planning at this point, but this is a major shift in public policy in terms of where for the authority and responsibility for siting of schools. Back in a time when we were doing planning and we used to identify school sites for the future on comprehensive plans, it was kind of nice to be able to do that and work with school districts. And then we found out that when you when you place the designation of, let's say, a public facility on a piece of property, you better own that piece of property, because if not, you get into the question of taking, and so there has to be other land use designations that are applicable, and the land can develop for other purposes. So this is a thorny kind of issue at this point, and I would submit, although well-intended, to shift the responsibility to counties and cities at this point is certainly premature. Thank you.
All right. Any questions from this panel?
Yeah. Are premature or unfunded mandate?
Both. Because I think to undertake, and I can't really speak to the question, so I didn't, in terms of whether local government or what elements of local government was involved in the work that brought this forward at this point. I haven't had anybody mention it to me, so I don't know. But certainly an unfunded mandate at best. And I think it's premature in the fact that we haven't talked about it in more detail with, I think, more of the partners that would be involved in this to get to this point.
Just one follow-up. Have we talked legislative fiscal into letting you actually add on to their fiscal statements when you have a fiscal now?
I think Chair Garrett, Representative Clem, we are usually asked for a fiscal response, and I know at least I haven't done one yet, but it will be forthcoming.
Further questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Linda Ludwig, Bill Blosser, and Katrina Hedberg.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig from League of Oregon Cities. Let me take you back 2 years, just a slight blush back. In the 2007 session, we did a substantial modification to Chapter 195, which sandwiches 2946 House Bill. Those modifications took high-growth school districts at 10,000 population or more, and cities that were 10,000 population and more, and lowered the bar in terms of their coordination with cities for planning purposes for school facilities, down to 2,500. So we swept in substantial more cities and school districts in that legislation. In addition to that legislation, there was meet and confer requirements several times a year, and to jointly work on the school facility plans. I would submit to you today that we don't yet know what the outcome of the legislation that was passed in 2007, how many more school districts and cities are working together in that planning process. So I wanted to make you aware of that. There were substantial amendments to that portion of statute that this bill would also be dropped into. Having said that, cities do support coordinating our school facility plans with school districts. Absolutely. We do have cities that are very good at doing that currently, and we probably have some cities that aren't undertaking that effort. We concur with Mr. Slack. There would be a significant fiscal to cities under this bill. I have some numbers that we can get to legislative fiscal, but there would be a fiscal. I also was contacted by several school districts that were not supportive of the bill, and I believe that you probably have a letter from the Beaverton School District. I hope you do. I think that was the intent. I'm not advocating for them, but I can give it to the administrator to put it in the record if you don't currently have it.
All right. Thank you very much. Dr. Hedberg?
Vice Chair Garrett and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the interim state epidemiologist with the Public Health Division of the Oregon Department of Human Services. And it's really a pleasure for me to be here. It's a little, which we say, unprecedented. I'm usually used to talking to health committees and that kind of thing. So I appreciate this opportunity to weigh in a little bit on the public health impact that school siting has.
Currently, about a quarter of Oregon teens are overweight and obese, and that number has tripled over the past 20 years, so we're really in the middle of an epidemic of obesity. Obesity is associated with a number of public health problems, diabetes, asthma, high blood pressure. An estimated 14,000 Oregon kids already have pre-diabetes as a result of being overweight. And, of course, obese children are also more likely to become obese adults, and obesity costs Oregon in healthcare dollars an estimated $781 million in healthcare expenditures, and that's due to things like diabetes, heart disease, et cetera. So, simply put, obesity results from too many calories coming in and not enough being expended. And particularly, I think, kids today are not as physically active as they have been in the past. During 2005 to 2006, only about half of Oregon 8th and 11th graders met the CDC's recommendations for physical activity of an hour or more each day. I think one of the things that happens is people are physically active if it is the easy thing to do. So one of the things about siting schools in a way that kids can walk to, that can use the facilities in terms of getting physical activity, is that that will make it easier for them to do. The environment's really effective. A school is sited on a very busy street, for example, that's parents are worried about kids crossing over and getting hit by a car. That makes it less likely that they'll walk to school. So school siting, among other things, is one of the key elements to making sure that our kids are stay active. So in summary, the Public Health Division supports passage of this bill, and I'd be happy to address any of your questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hedberg, I'm looking at your printed testimony. 25% of eighth graders were overweight. Is there a measurement among the, and it doesn't show how many of those, I don't think, walked to school, but do you know of the 25% that are overweight, how many, what proportion of those walk to school?
Chair Nolan and Representative Hanna, I don't specifically know those data. What we do know is that communities where children are more likely to walk to school and be physically active do have lower rates of obesity, but I don't have the direct numbers of, in Oregon, how many of those overweight or obese children do walk. I may be able to get that for you with some of our data.
Follow-up? Yes, Representative.
And thank you. And it's just interesting because you present a few facts in your letter, but it leaves a lot of questions for me, and I'd like to understand them better. What about among those who are obese, do you know the percentage of those who participate in physical education required by that school?
So Chair Nolan and Representative Hanna, again, I don't specifically know that question. What we do know, and there was a physical education bill that I recently testified on as well, that kids are getting less and less physical education in school. In fact, they're getting less as 11th graders or 12th graders than they do in earlier grades. So again, we do know that there's a correlation. What's difficult to say is that, again, I mentioned that the obesity is related to both calories going in and calories being expended. So when you ask to pinpoint, is there one specific thing, I cannot say that citing a school in a way that makes it so kids could walk will address the whole obesity epidemic. It's a piece of it. Clearly, what is in the diet works as well. What physical education, how it becomes part of a healthy lifestyle. I think that's the particular thing about land use planning, is it is one piece of it, and it has to do with an overall healthy lifestyle, that the easier walking, biking to school become easier choices.
And finally, my last comment is less of a question than a comment, but again, it would press you for a number I don't expect you to have. But having grown up in a very rural area, I did have the fortune of walking to school, but many of my friends who lived out South Myrtle or out North Myrtle rode the bus. But they grew up on a farm, and they were very physically active. And when they came to school, they were very physically active. So, again, I would say you present some numbers here, but I think you could pick groups out of there and say those who grew up in a rural farm activity might be more active than somebody who lived close and walked to school. So I'm just not sure the correlation is there, and I guess if we're going to present the numbers, it'd be nice to know that really you can prove that somehow citing a school where a certain portion of the population can walk to it versus really teaching people about physical activity, physical fitness, and discipline and caloric intake are keys.
So, Chair Nolan and Representative Hannett, thank you very much. I can get you some more data, and I'll give it to the administrator, committee administrator, because there have been a number of studies that have looked at specifically this issue. But again, a child living in a very rural area, we don't necessarily expect that they're able to walk to school. This addresses one piece of it, which is more likely to be urban or suburban schools that might be in a place where kids, in fact, could bike or could walk to school. So it addresses one piece of it. It clearly is not the whole answer, but I don't think if there were one simple answer, we would have solved the problem of obesity. So it's really what we say is a comprehensive or a multi-pronged approach is what's needed.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Are there more people to testify?
I have three more on this bill, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Danielle Welliver, Ruth Scott, and Matt Cyrus. That's all I have signed up on this bill. Is there anyone else who arrived later and hasn't yet signed up who wants to testify on House Bill 2946? Okay, great. Ms. Welliver.
Hello, my name is Danielle Welliver, and I am here representing Thousand Friends. Thank you, Chair Nolan and members of the committee. Thousand Friends of Oregon supports HB 2946, including the amendments that you may have gotten today. We participated along with other organizations, school districts, and local governments in the Center for Innovative School Facilities process that reached consensus on the content of HB 2946. Current law, ORS 195-110, requires school districts and local jurisdictions to coordinate in planning for and siting school facilities. This bill ensures that this planning actually takes place by requiring it to be part of the periodic update of local plans. HB 2946 also provides a policy framework for that joint planning. Throughout the history of this country, schools have formed the civic heart of our neighborhoods and communities. They contribute to neighborhood identity and are a gathering place for neighbors, offering events and facilities that bring the community together. In addition, well-designed and located schools with sidewalk connections play a vital role in reducing childhood obesity by making walking and bicycling possible. Increased walking and biking and decreased need for driving also decreases greenhouse gas emissions. When schools are not planned for in advance, there is often pressure to expand urban growth boundaries, usually onto farmland to locate new schools. These schools are not located in existing communities. They require far more driving by cars and buses to transport children, thereby increasing greenhouse gas emissions. And often new infrastructure must be extended to serve them. The short-term attraction of cheaper land is soon swamped by the increased life cycle cost to the school district, the local government, and the community. Schools are too important to be left out of the comprehensive planning process. We urge you to support HB 2946. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Ms. Scott.
Chairman Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Ruth Scott. I'm with Innovation Partnership and our project, the Center for Innovative School Facilities. I'm basically speaking on behalf of Bill Blosser, who at the last minute was not able to be here, so you can refer to his testimony. Essentially, we want to be clear that in the land use process, school facilities have, as he says, been the outlier. They have not been... When you look at what the definition of infrastructure, you see almost everything there except school facilities. And you can almost ask the question of how did they ever not get included in this particular logical place? As we're doing our community planning, as we're thinking about the future, certainly education and locating our education facilities is in a central part of that thinking. I want to clarify that ORS 195 that was passed or that was beefed up in 2007 really brought this issue to the surface and clarified it a good deal. This additionally, it does not change 195, but it strengthens it somewhat.
The Center for Innovative School Facilities has been working throughout the state with school districts, and we're finding over and over again that the school districts and the local governments are both busy, frankly. And while they're encouraged by 195 to talk with each other and have a collaborative process, time, circumstances, and a lot of other things get in the way. And the reality is, in the last couple of years, we have had numerous schools located in areas that neither the local government or the school district were happy with. And had there been in place a long-range facility planning process that started 10 years ago, not 2 years ago, we would have not seen these things happen. So this just puts a little bit more teeth. It does not change the bill, but it does make it stronger. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cyrus.
Thank you, Chair of Committee. Matt Cyrus, Deschutes County. I hadn't planned on speaking on this bill, wasn't even aware of it until I got here, but wanted to address a couple things. Personally, I think it sounds like a great idea. I think siting of schools should be part of the planning process, especially due to their impacts on agriculture and transportation. For example, there's always a push to increase buffers around schools, prohibiting agricultural activities, pesticide applications, etc. So when you start siting schools out into the agricultural lands, suddenly then you have a significant impact on agricultural lands, albeit maybe unintentionally at the time. I was here last week, and there was discussion about creating buffers around agricultural lands for destination resorts. But if there ever was something that needs to be addressed because of the potential buffering requirements, it's siting of schools in agricultural lands. The other one has to do with transportation. A lot of times the thought hasn't gone into the planning for the transportation infrastructure for a school, and also the impacts of the school on the surrounding roads. For example, the 45 or 55 mile an hour road that suddenly becomes a 20 mile an hour zone because of a school being added, and the impacts of other long range planning. For example, the city of Bend quite a few years ago identified an east side bypass, and that route became unusable because a few schools had been sited along it. So instead, Bend ended up putting in a bypass through the middle of town to the tune of several times more dollars than what had originally been planned. So, like I say, I think this is a great bill. It's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions of this panel? Representative Esquivel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ma'am, you've been talking about people pushing out into the urban growth boundary and hurrying it up and throwing out a school there. Well, when's that happened lately? What community did that? I'm kind of curious, because we just built a school and we just bonded $189 million, but we'd owned the property for 30-some years.
Well, excuse me, Representative Rascal. A perfect example is Clackamas County. A school was just sited on the edge of the urban growth boundary, and neither the school district nor the local government were happy with that. But unfortunately, unlike your community, they had not owned the land for 30 years. They had to buy it, and it was the best cost they could get.
Follow up? Just a statement. It's very, very difficult. It's not difficult to plan for school. It's just difficult to acquire the property for a school. I mean, we're not talking 5 acres here, folks. We're talking a substantially large footprint, and that makes a difficulty of planning.
Absolutely.
And you cannot anticipate having that large of a footprint. School districts today need to be going out in the potential urban growth boundary of the future and purchasing property just like we did 37 years ago or what it was.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel. That is absolutely true. However, that's why we do need to be doing that 10 and 20-year look. And the other thing we're finding is that nationally, the norm these days is shared use, so that when you have that 40-acre footprint, it's not just a school, but there's other uses that are there. And that also requires that long-range planning to be successful in purchasing the land, developing the partnerships to have that successful development for the future.
We should all learn from your example.
Any other
questions for this panel?
Just a comment.
Representative Wingert?
I think
part of the discussion about the future of public school building is a little bit stuck in the 20th century. I'm not convinced that the future of public schools is what we've been doing, the idea of a large piece of land that is the central school for that community and will be built on a large footprint. Not only do I think that the way that education reform is going, you're not likely to see necessarily an emphasis on there being one school in the community, but maybe a number of options that are available in different places, some of which may actually exist in cyberspace as well. So the idea of there being a neighborhood school, I think, is a 20th century model, which recedes with every decade that is going on. But I'd also like to emphasize that I think the most critical element of what this bill is getting at is this idea of shared use. I have seen, I represent a suburban, couple of suburban school districts. It is fairly absurd to see the kind of money that we spend on a public school these days that gets as little use as that building gets for the money that we are pouring into it. And the idea that we would build public schools and not incorporate mixed use into them. I mean, there was a discussion about health issues, and obesity. First of all, you can help defray the cost by having other kinds of anchor tenants in a facility like this, but they can also be beneficial to your overall mission. If a Bally's or some kind of a fitness company is one of your tenants in your building, you now have access to equipment for your PE classes that your students can take advantage of. So there's a tremendous amount of cost savings involved and a lot of goals that can be reached by simply thinking about a number of uses for that building. That it is really more than a school. It can be a mixed-use development with commercial properties in it. It could also be open to the community in many other ways besides just being available as a school. So I appreciate the intent on that part of the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Representative Klim.
Just want to make one quick comment. I just want to thank Matt for taking the opportunity since you were here to testify and be assured that the omnibus EFU bill that I looked at has just as much scrutiny on schools as it does destination resorts.
Thank you. I will enter into the record. We received written testimony on this bill from three people that is available to you at your seats at the dais. Just for the record, though, I will acknowledge receiving testimony from Dick Steinbrugge with the Beaverton School District, Brian Rankin with Deschutes County, or from Deschutes County, and John Rexford with the Bend Lapine School District, and those will be part of our record as well. Last call for testimony on House Bill 2946.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
just a question. I see I have here a letter from Ben Lapine, but not from the Beaverton District. So if we could...
it came in electronically, yes. So you don't have it physically in front of you. Hearing no further testimony on that, we'll close that public hearing and... Forgive me, but I'm going to take 30 seconds because I neglected to put other written testimony on previous bills on the record. I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2879 to acknowledge written testimony from Randy Tucker with Metro and close that public hearing. Reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2898 to acknowledge written testimony from Richard Whitman, the director of the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development, and close that public hearing. Now, we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2882. We have quite a few people here to testify, and I think we should be able to get to all of you, at least all the ones I am aware of, and we'll try to make that happen. Ms. Ross, will you tee up the bill? And while we do that, Mr. Cyrus was the first to sign up for this, so we'll invite Matt Cyrus back, Connie Cyrus, and Keith Cyrus.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Cyrus family, come and talk to us. Ms. Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, the bill permits commercial events and the siting of associated structures under conditionally allowable use as a private park in areas zoned for exclusive farm use.
Cyrus family, I am really not paying attention today. Could I? Oh. Representative Wisnett, I am very sorry. I sent apologies to him for making him wait through the last bill, and then I neglected to put your name here.
Madam Chair, I think you also have somebody from the Deschutes County Planning Commission.
Okay. Since I think you're constituents of his, I think that may be why.
I'm supposed to wait.
No,
you stay. He's waving you on. It's me who's in the doghouse, not you.
Madam Chair, Committee, Matt Cyrus, Deschutes County. I'll be brief. The weddings have been happening on EFU lands for a lot of years, even before they were designated EFU, probably back to the dawn of time. And in fact, I submitted some testimony related to the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, a federal act dating back to 2000, that I think would be relevant to this topic. I would encourage you all to take a good look at the details of that testimony I submitted. And basically, the bottom line is I think this is an opportunity for the committee to correct a hole that appears to be prevalent in Oregon's land use restrictions in EFU zones, in that there isn't any place within the conditional uses that appear for weddings maybe to occur or to be allowed, even though historically they've been happening for centuries in rural lands. I would hate to think that an expanded interpretation of this restriction might limit 4-H clubs from having judging contests on farms and farm auctions and everything else, all the other group activities and things that are normally associated with farmlands. It's pretty common for somebody to want to get married out in a rural setting with a picturesque setting, you know, be it an orchard or fields or mountains or whatever in the background. And I would hope that the committee would provide an avenue by which these can occur as a conditional use, and we're not asking for an outright use, but at least a place to stick it into the ordinances as a conditional use, so that the counties then can address it, being it is an issue of statewide concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cyrus.
Chair Nolan and committee. He said many of the things that I was going to say. I just hope that you would give approval to House Bill 2882, give an avenue for the county to legalize weddings held on EFU.
Cyrus, I neglected to remind people again. Also, would you please state your name and your county of residence when you start?
I'm sorry.
We have a good record.
Do you need an address as well?
Nope, just county.
Connie Cyrus, Deschutes County.
Thank you.
That was quick. My name is Keith Cyrus. I obviously am Deschutes County, and I want to make it clear my testimony today is personal and has nothing to do with my involvement with the Deschutes County Planning Commission. I don't get to vote. So what I thought I'd do is just Chairman Nolan, just a little review of how we got to where we are. We farmed there. I've lived there in the county all my life. And back in 1967, we built an irrigation reservoir to store water. And next thing you know, we put fish in it, and then we start building picnic tables, and we gather around. And for the farm community, it's hard to get away in the summertime to go to some of the other places, the lakes and such. So we kind of developed our own, and then that evolved into where the potato growers in Oregon needed a venue to have a big barbecue, and so we did that, and big steak fry, and number of events, 4-H club, meets, community. It's open to the community. 4th of July, that's a big community picnic and potluck. We've had church services there. We've had baptisms there. Volunteer fire department meets there. Picnics. Retired military officers use the site. Class reunions. Quite a lot of use. We've used it for fundraiser for Sparrow Club last 3 years to support that program, and kind of general use. But through the course of all of this, these people come and see the site we have. We're on 450 acres and pretty well isolated from the neighbors, so you know, we're very aware of that impact. But you know, out of this, people start asking, well, could we have a wedding there? Yeah, well, why not? And most recently, you know, we've been in discussion at the county level for over a year now, and we're getting notices of intent to code enforcement citations for continuing some of these activities. So we hope you can help us come to some resolve that we can make this work for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Let's bring up Kay Knott, Carrie Downs, and Becky Wilkins. Oh, no. Hello. Representative Wisnick, can I escort you personally up to the dais?
Madam Chair, I know it's not intended. You were being very concerned about
I don't have your name on the list. My mistake.
No. Thank you very much. I'll get organized here, too. Madam Chair and honorable colleagues, I am Gene Wisnett, State Representative, District 53, and thank you for holding this hearing on this topic. As I've explained to the chair, House Bill 2882, as drafted, was a start at my honest and humble attempt to address a statewide issue which surfaced in my district recently. The question is whether to allow weddings or commercial gatherings on agricultural lands. But this is not just a Deschutes County issue. I think there's several counties. I've also learned that, you know, wineries are using their facility, EFUs, for, I don't know about orchards, they're using orchards for weddings, but it's a situation that has evolved, as previous testimony has told you, that's been going on. So the question now is, what do we do? So based upon a lot of constituent requests that I received, I drafted House Bill 2882 based upon a concept which Senator Metzger also used for Senate Bill 325. And basically I submitted as a placeholder to try to find some suggestions and comments on how we can make this situation work between the farmers or the EFU owners, landowners, and their neighbors. I prefer to have counties decide how to handle this situation because each county is different, and I believe in local control. But the issue has become statewide, and I believe that general statewide policy could be established with specific policy delegated to the counties. And I talked to the Deschutes County Administrator today, and that's what the county is really looking at. And you're going to hear testimony today from a member of the Planning Commission in official capacity where Mr. Cyrus could not do that. And obviously, a question like this, my office has received many, many inputs. We have received about 400 letters in support of weddings on agricultural land, many describing their wedding, many describing the economic impact and how they support it. But also I've received a lot of phone calls and emails. They're very passionate in opposition. A good family sent me photos about what things that they're concerned about. They're concerned about things like the quality of life to neighbors through noise, dust, lights, traffic, violation of state lands, and whether it's legal or not. And I have asked that the record acknowledge the number of letters of support we received. The letters were submitted to the county, but then they provided me copies of how they do support this bill. Also, the Central Oregon Visitors Association, representing over 450 business members, have written the county that the rural weddings on agricultural land or commercial gatherings do provide revenue to the wedding industry in Central Oregon. Some of the companies involved in this new industry are concerned that the county, which allows these events, if they don't gain it, they're going to go to our neighboring county. And also, Madam Chair, I'd like to acknowledge that Representative George Gilman is monitoring this testimony because some of this is taking place in Deschutes County that is under his districts. There's estimates of all sorts of estimates of how much money this generates. I was told that the average catering, just the catering cost, sometimes runs $10,000 per wedding. So it does bring revenue in for the motel rooms, restaurants, meals, and other sources. I think I say for your information, I'm sure that the chair knows, and for the public's information, ORS 215-283 authorizes many non-farming uses for EFU land. Some examples are public and private schools, essential school operation buildings, churches, cemeteries, even breeding and kenneling and training of greyhounds for racing, wineries, farm stands, aircraft runway and support buildings. So there's many uses in the state has identified for EFU land. And I hope that the group of citizens and organizations that are speaking to you today and expressed interest in this, that we can get together and decide on a statewide policy to allow weddings and commercial gatherings with specific conditions and controls, which will be determined by the counties. The good neighbor policies could address frequencies, times, numbers, minimum size of EFU lands, and I think that the county's already done that on MUA land. Is not authorized anymore. They've already issued that, they will not allow that. Also, there could be a requirement to pay and play for off-duty police officers for traffic control enforcement of state and county laws. The Bend Bulletin editorial board stated that finding the right balance between a property owner's need for income and a neighbor's need for sleep won't be easy. But both Representative Wisnett and Senator Metzger need to continue to try. And I welcome this committee's input or suggestions on how to proceed. I'll be glad to work with committee members and citizens on both sides of this issue, the Farm Bureau and other land use advocates, to determine and develop a statewide policy which would allow weddings and commercial gatherings on EFU while being good neighbors, but also which would delegate the decision and specifics to the individual counties. I've talked to LCDC about the Big Look Committee looking at this and putting it on, and I know that Representative Clem has his ominous bill that could also be addressed. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll end and hope and let these good citizens that traveled a long way speak to the committee. Do you have any questions?
Representative Wisnett, thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Any questions for this fine representative from rural Deschutes County?
Wow, really soak this in, Gene.
Take advantage of the truth. No, I would not do that.
You've just completely overwhelmed us. Thank you. Okay, I think now we're going to go to Kay Knott, Carrie Downs, and Becky Wilkins. On deck, we will have Kelly Brown, Gladys, I'm sorry, Igler, and Sean Cleave. Ms. Knott?
Yes. Yes, Chairman Nolan and rest of the committee. I'm Kay Knott. I'm an individual property owner from Deschutes County, and I'm testifying today as a neighbor of one of the venues. The property that we live next to, we are property owners, have lived there for approximately 20 years. The activities have been going on there for significantly longer than that. Virtually, we have no impact or feel no impact from the activity. I would have to say that we have much more impact from the Sisters Rodeo and special events in Sisters, traffic-wise and noise-wise, than we do from the events over on the property next to us. And I think that attests to the management of the activities as much as anything else. I think that weddings in rural areas are or can be a very good thing if they're properly managed. I think they bring money into the community as well as to individuals who may be struggling to survive in the tough economic times these days. I do know I have a friend in another county, neighboring county, who also does weddings, and she has been receiving inquiries from individuals from Deschutes County who have been turned down because Deschutes County can no longer do weddings in rural areas, and they are going over to Jefferson County. The only, generally, the only way I know that there's an activity going on next door is when I see the sign pointing people in the direction of the event. And I think that pretty well covers it. I think that weddings are good and in the rural area, and I encourage you to support this bill.
Thank you. Carrie Downs.
Chair Nolan and committee members, thank you. My name is Carrie Downs. I live in Deschutes County. I have a 40-acre farm in Deschutes County, and I actually do farm it. We farm grass hay because that's about all we can on low sand and with a lot of water and a lot of fertilizer and 6 to 8 weeks of no frost temperatures. That's about all we get. In addition to that, I just want to talk a little bit today about what I have and what exists in my neighborhood and how it impacts us. But with respect to where I live on Dodds Road, and Dodds Road's about 7 miles long, and I live at milepost 3. And from the inception of Dodds Road to milepost 3 at my house, there are the following things that people are doing that are legal, according to Deschutes County. And we've got the Oregon National Youth Guard Challenge school, where they take 156 kids for 5 months at a time, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. We've got a farmer's market that operates every Sunday from May to October with live music, vendors, beer and wine, and food. We've got a dog training and dog agility school. We have two horse trainers that have numerous events where people come with tents, trailers, play some music. There's a private airport. In addition to that, in Deschutes County in the last year, the following two things have been approved on EFU land. There's been a pay-to-play paintball facility, so you can come out and shoot each other with paintballs and pay your money to do that. There was cited a trap club where you shoot clay targets and you go from 7 in the morning till 10 at night is their restriction. All those things occur on EFU land in Deschutes County, and out where I live, it's all EFU land. Some of the things that I have done on my property legally, we hosted a wedding for my daughter. We've hosted a wedding for a close relative. We've hosted a wedding for a very good friend's daughter. But here's what I don't dare do on my property, according to a certified letter I received last week from Deschutes County, and that is I cannot rent my property to you and you have a wedding. Yet I can rent my property for a day, a week, a month, or a year. But if you're going to have a wedding there, according to Deschutes County, that is illegal and I'm violating the law and I'm now doing illegal activities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Wilkins?
Yes, my name is Becky Wilkins, and with my husband Dave Wilkins and I, we are the owners and operators of four small businesses in Deschutes County. All of these businesses are focused on the wedding and event industry. We own Star Productions Entertainment Services, which is a DJ company, Star Limousine, which is a transportation company, Celebrations DVD, which provides video services, and we produce a magazine, a Celebrations Wedding and Event Resource Guide. I have a copy here, and I'd be happy to leave a couple, but I didn't bring 25, so I apologize. I'm currently the president associated with the magazine of the Central Oregon Event Professionals Association, which is comprised of 75 wedding-related businesses. These businesses are represented in our magazine as advertisers and are promoted throughout the area as wedding professionals. Our website serves thousands each month, that is centraloregonevents.net, with photos, articles, and links to our members' websites. I'm representing my own companies and those of our association in support of HB 2882. We support the addition of weddings on EFU land throughout the state and especially in Deschutes County. If this bill does pass quickly, we can reverse the negative effects currently impacting Deschutes County EFU land businesses and increase revenue streams immediately. I have 10 resort and private facilities within my group as well. Although there is a possibility of reducing competition for weddings with them, we have found that the customers for these venues are very different with very different budgets. A resort private club setting is primarily a catering facility, and the average minimum cost starts at $10,000 $1,000 per event. This is in stark contrast to the individually owned private settings and park and recreation facilities where they start at an average of about $1,000 with no minimum on services or food and beverage. In fact, most allow a very wide variety of ways to that you can come in and do things on your own, therefore reducing your budget by over $10,000. I'm going to have to go very quickly here. The overall financial impact of weddings is on an average of $44,000 per wedding. So these venues not being able to produce this revenue over this year is impacting Deschutes County directly to the tune of over $4 million, just looking at these small resorts. So we strongly urge you, within my list is all 75 businesses are attached to this list here in support of this operation so that we can support local businesses and promote business in Deschutes County right now.
Thank you for making the effort to come and testify before us all. Thanks. Kelly Brown, Gladys Igler, Sean Cleave. Next up, J.R. Brown, Alicia McDonald, and David McDonald. Ms. Brown?
Madam Chair Nolan and Committee House, my name is Kelly Brown and I live in Deschutes County. I am an EFU property owner in Deschutes County and I am in favor of HB 2882. My husband and I operate an outdoor wedding and event site on our property. Over the past 5 years, I have hosted 61 outdoor events on our 40 acres. Due to the rising cost of maintaining farmland in Central Oregon, we were forced to get creative with our land. This small seasonal business has supplemented the high cost of water, fertilizer, custom farming, insurance, and taxes. Through self-regulation and a conscientious attitude, this business concept has coexisted with surrounding neighbors and agricultural practices without any negative impacts. I am in favor of HB 2882 because it would provide a regulated CUP process for landowners to go through, while also offering an opportunity to supplement the high cost of maintaining agriculture land. Times have changed, and I believe our land use regulations must accommodate. In this day and age, it is no longer possible to support a family using historical farming and ranching practices in Central Oregon. Unfortunately, the alternative is to sell the land for development. If given the choice, I believe most people would choose an occasional country wedding over acres of subdivisions. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you much. Gladys, I'm sorry.
That's fine, Chair Nolan. Good afternoon, Chair Nolan and members of the Land Use Committee. My name is Gladys Bigler. I live in Deschutes County. I'm a retired forester and dedicated 35 years to the stewardship of our natural resources. My last assignment was managing a multi-million dollar seedling and extractory operation in Deschutes County. I also own agriculture land and I'm opposed to this particular amendment. You should have a complete one-page copy of my testimony. Briefly, I'd like to reiterate six reasons why I believe you should deny moving this legislation forward. To allow events as proposed is to deny the obvious. Weddings, parties, and events are not recreational activities. Deschutes County is embroiled in two similar measures. Applicants repeatedly identify their operations as businesses, not recreational activities. This particular proposal is too broad, and it allows too many interpretations. It fails to meet an Oregon Court of Appeals ruling, which required narrowing of exceptions on EFU lands. And I'd be happy to clarify that if you need that. There is no need. We have established in Deschutes County that there's many current legal businesses who have followed the law and who have played by the rules and who would like and can supply this type of need. Deschutes County has a prime example of this occurring, and I'd love to share that with you if you're interested. As many of you are business owners, I hope that you can understand and support this sentiment. Current rules exist with built-in protections for agricultural operations and can accommodate the proposed use. And I'd like to say that farmers and ranchers in Deschutes County overwhelmingly are in opposition of this proposal. They have the most to lose, both economically as well as socially and as well as quality of life. And I also also asked you to read Dr. Whitelaw's testimony with regard to the economics. He contends that there's a wash between the economic benefits of this particular proposal. Thank you very much for accepting my testimony. If there's any questions, I'd love to address them.
Thank you. Mr. Cleave.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau, testifying today in opposition to House Bill 2882 as drafted. I don't want to belabor any points that have already been made. I will say that Representative Wisnett's testimony was fairly all-encompassing. There are a variety of activities that farmers partake as a sidebar to their agricultural operations. However, I think the bill as drafted adds another layer of conflict to a statute that's been added to over and over again over the years. The Farm Bureau wouldn't be opposed to having conversations about providing certain mechanisms that would limit these activities, but not define this as a land use in the EFU zone. For your record, I have provided two pieces of information. One is the story of the week from the Oregon Department of Agriculture. This was February 25th, 2009. It shows that agriculture as an industry in Oregon grew, even though the overall economy has shrunk 1.2%. We are nearing $5 billion annually in sales. That is the second largest industry next to high tech in Oregon. So when conversations regarding economic output inevitably come up within these statutes, I just like to make that point for the record. Secondly, there is a copy of a statute that I've included, Chapter 433. These are regulations of outdoor mass gatherings. This statute provides a pretty good framework for dealing with health, safety, transportation impacts for mass gatherings. Of course, this was drafted around the concept of a concert or something of that nature, but I think just for the record, inside a conversation for these types of events, I think this might be a better framework to address the issue with. So, and with that, I'll
conclude. Thank you for your testimony. Colleagues, I have 11 more people signed up to testify. So just be mindful that to give them all an opportunity to speak before we adjourn at 5 o'clock, we should be pretty succinct. I do see two people who want to make quick questions. Representative Wingert.
Just a question, John. Is it the Farm Bureau's policy that nothing but agriculture should take place in the rural areas of Oregon?
I don't believe it's the Farm Bureau's policy that nothing but agriculture should take place in rural Oregon. However, it is the Farm Bureau's policy that a exclusive farm use statute, a zoning mechanism that is there to describe what activities occur in coordination with farming, should be just that. And when we add to that statute, inevitably, there is a conflict, and from the Farm Bureau's point of view, Representative Wingert, our interest is not choosing one thing which may be better over another, but just taking a strict policy approach to say, if this is an EFU zone, then those activities that occur should be tied to the agricultural production. I will say that I don't think our membership would be opposed to having a discussion of contiguous commercial activities, but I think that's a broader policy discussion on how you define an auxiliary operation that may or may not have anything to do with the farming operation.
Thank you. Representative Clem, in.
I just want to make a comment because, unfortunately, I've got a daughter with 102-degree fever, and that's why I'm taking phone calls and things, so I didn't want to be rude to anybody here, but I need to go meet my wife in just a moment. But I think, for me, I'm going to go back and listen to whatever happens after I leave, but I'm just you know, I was looking up Marion County's mass gathering statute. It appears some counties are doing it and can do it, and I'm just unclear if this is a Civil War in Deschutes County issue that's landed in front of us or what. And you know, I just got to think a little bit about that and why it can work in Jefferson and not in other places. If it's really the state statute or just implementation sort of issues, and I just want to explain why I've been darting around and now leaving.
If we have some knowledge and can answer that question, is it appropriate to answer?
Sure. I think that would be helpful for the committee. I do want to keep this concise because I want to respect the other people who've signed up and made their effort to testify. But Ms.
just
Bigler.
Very briefly, there's only two counties within the state that I know of that have passed legislation that have allowed these operations, and that's Clackamas County and Hood River County. And then there is some concern that had anyone testified against those two particular proposals, the proposal might not have gone forward with the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Okay. Right. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would ask for written comment back on this piece because I think we heard testimony that there was overwhelming opposition to something, to this particular proposal. And it seemed like from Representative Wisnett's testimony, he indicated overwhelming support, and it sounded like that was both from the same group. So Representative Wisnett indicated in his written testimony somewhere over 400 letters of support. So we know that is written testimony, but I'd like to have a written response to the overwhelming opposition so that we better understand that. And finally, a question for Mr. Cleave. If the Farm Bureau itself decided to somehow celebrate an anniversary of a farm and went to gather, for instance, on the folks who were here earlier at their irrigation pond, and you were going to have a 100-year celebration of that farm, would this ruling prohibit that or further encumber them, or because it's not a wedding, you could have that gathering?
Rep. Nolan, Representative Hannah, just to paraphrase what you were asking, just so I respond correctly, you were asking me if a farmer had some celebration, would the Oregon Farm Bureau oppose that under the same precept that we would oppose this legislation?
That's not quite the paraphrasing. I said if the Oregon Farm Bureau, your own organization on one of your members' farms, i.e. the folks who were here and testified earlier, if they were a member of the Oregon Farm Bureau and you said, hey, we're looking for a member to have a celebration of some type, an anniversary, 100 years of Oregon Farm Bureau or something, could you have that celebration on their property under this statute? Or because it's not a wedding, would that not be allowed?
I think ultimately the problem here is that from county to county, there is a different interpretation of what's allowed. And not reflecting this statute entirely, anything that might be done statutorily may be in conflict to a current practice. To your question, again, I would have to say that the Farm Bureau has policy there that tries to apply anything that would cause a conflict equally, regardless of what it is. Unfortunately, I have the dubious task of receiving multiple calls during the interim and actually during session two from Farm Bureau to Farm Bureau member conflicts. So I know that's not quite the answer you're asking, but I understand why you're asking it. And I would say that it depends on, and this is the problem with Oregon, or one of the problems with Oregon's land use system is that it is a complaint-driven process.
Madam Chair, with your indulgence, can I just drive at this just one more time? Because I want to be specific, and I think what I'm trying to point out, Madam Chair, is that they need to get together. because there's a problem here. So let me just change it ever so slightly.
Sure.
Let's direct this to Deschutes County. So let's not be vague. Let's say this is happening in Deschutes County. Would you be in violation if you wanted to have a celebration at that pond that was described earlier? Would you be in violation of your own policy?
Representative Nolan, Representative Hannah, yes, we would be in violation of our policy. However, I will comment that Deschutes County, as a process, submits a letter annually which objects from the statewide Farm Bureau's policy on land use, and we do have mechanisms to provide that. So, yes, there would be a conflict with our state policy. However, there is mechanisms to mitigate those conflicts, and that using that county as an example, they do object from that.
So you have a local chapter that disagrees with the state.
Yes.
Point. Okay. Let's bring the other folks up because I do want to give an opportunity to everyone who has come to testify. J.R. Brown, Alicia McDonald, David McDonald. Next up will be Richard Kleiss, Danielle Welliver, and James Gindelsberg.
Real quick, Madam Chair, can I ask the chair? Can we have an interpretation of why we're here with this? Because it's obviously it has to do with the local ordinances, not necessarily state.
Well, we're here because we have a bill. And I wanted to see if there was interest and a possibility for the state to make a difference here. Yes, who do we have? J.R. Brown.
Supersede. Chair Nolan. Committee members, my name is J.R. Brown. I'm from Deschutes County. I'm fourth generation EFU property owner, raising the fifth generation on the same property. I am in favor of HB 2882. My wife and I, we've had a little wedding business on our property now since 2003. We did this just to supplement the income from the farm. My wife went to the Deschutes County to ask for permit. They did not have anything. We were told that we could go on as long as we did not have any complaints from neighboring-type complaints. So we did. We went about it. We've had over 60 events now, never had one complaint to our weddings at all. Our family's tried all sorts of different things to try and make it work on our place, and we've proven that it can't be done unless there's something out there that everybody hasn't got on board with. The additional income has just made it so we can keep on to our family farm, and we've done it right. We've gone to all our neighbors. We stayed good, kept good fences, and kept in with all of our neighbors and tried to do it right. And so, anyways, I'm not going to go on with it, take any more of your time, but I am in favor of 2882. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Chairman Nolan.
Okay.
And committee members.
Mr. McDonald.
I'm David McDonald, Deschutes County. My great-grandfather came to Oregon in 1852 and moved to Central Oregon in the 1870s. That family ranch in Ashwood is still run by one of my brothers. Two other brothers and a sister are farming or ranching in Central Oregon. I live east of Bend on a small 20-acre farm. We raise grass hay and run cattle in the summer. Farming is a good life if you work hard and are creative. Having weddings on a farm is well with farm life. It's a way for people to be in the open air, under the warm sun, with friends, loved ones on a special day. The weddings are held in our yard among the trees and the beautiful scenery. We talk about keeping our farms, but in order to do that, we have to make them pay for the fertilizer, for the fuel, for the water, for the equipment to manage them. Being able to have weddings is a creative way to do this, and farm friendly. Please let us be creative and share our farms. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. McDonald?
Yes, my name is Lisa McDonald. I also live in Deschutes County. My family farms 20 acres east of Bend, and we grow hay and cattle. We do follow good farming practices and are good neighbors. Our farm is a working, producing, beautiful place. When friends approached us years back asking if they could be married at our home, it made so much sense to us. Here were people seeking to hold a joyous wedding celebration in the outdoor beauty of their hometown, unable to find a place to do that that was affordable. We thought, now this is a good secondary use of farmland. None of the farmers here today want to go commercial. In fact, the experience our brides desperately look for is a non-commercial use. Brides want the country experience with natural Oregon beauty as their backdrop. We think there is room to host weddings while we conscientiously farm the land. This is a compatible use. It's pretty basic that a business is born out of economic supply and demand. The demand for farm weddings is strong and statewide. There is a shortage of affordable outdoor wedding sites for Oregonians to enjoy. The economic impact felt locally is immense and benefits much more than just the individual farmers. Time and time again, at a local level, we have heard the testimony of many small business owners explaining how these weddings benefit their families and our communities. The Central Oregon Visitors Association, 450-plus business owners strong, have endorsed EFU weddings through submitted written testimony to you. It is really such a good fit. This is truly a green business, which promotes travel to Oregon while offering locals an opportunity to enjoy the beauty of their own state. It is my belief that there is a place for farm weddings in Oregon. Regulations at local levels will guarantee these events minimally impact neighbors. Now is the time to look ahead with vision and leadership and adjust some of the outdated land use laws of Oregon to best serve the majority of her citizens. I urge you to hear our voice and allow our farms to be what they have been historically, a gathering place for all citizens to celebrate their lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's invite Richard Kleisch, Danielle Welliver, and James Gindelsberg. And on deck we'll have Harry Catranos, Leslie Catranos, and Nicole Stevens. Mr. Kleisch, each one of you. All right, there you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Richard Kleiss, and I am a member of the Deschutes County Planning Commission. For the last year, we've been dealing with the issue of wedding events on EFU land, and I would like to share with you some of that information and express my support for this bill. The Deschutes County Planning Commission first became aware of the business of staging weddings on farmland about a year ago. An individual had been doing weddings as a business on a small 4-acre MUA parcel in such a manner as to antagonize his neighbors and deprive them of the quiet enjoyment of their property. He proposed a text amendment in an attempt to legitimize his operation. While we did not feel his proposal was viable and turned it down, we became aware that there were a number of wedding event venues functioning under the radar. The practice was far more extensive than anyone realized. We encouraged the other wedding event operators to propose a text amendment which would allow the county to regulate the business and avoid future conflicts. During our hearings, we have discovered many, and actually too many, relevant facts to list here. For example, unlike in the valley here, farming in Deschutes County is not a profit-making business due to short growing seasons and poor soil. Allowing farmers to host the occasional wedding generates supplemental income, which may make the difference between keeping a farm intact, thereby preserving open space, and splitting up the farm and selling it off piece by piece. For me, there are two powerful arguments for allowing weddings on EFU land. As previously testified, one of the applicants on our text amendment has produced 61 weddings over 5 years without a related complaint. And one of her neighbors is a Deschutes County sheriff who lives about 300 feet from the area where the dancing and the music takes place. This, for me, is proof of concept. The second argument in support is that Deschutes County has already approved two event venues in the northern part of the county near Terrebonne. They're called pumpkin patches. They operate in a similar fashion to the proposed wedding event venues, and their impacts on people and the land are equal to or greater than the proposed wedding venues. I have to stress again that they are operating with county approval. One is on EFU land and the other on MUA land. If the county has already approved these venues, there's no logical reason not to allow wedding events. I ask your indulgence. I'm very close.
Okay, oh, sure.
As a planning
very close, that's great.
As a planning commission, we see two stumbling blocks. The first is that the state doesn't specifically allow wedding event venues on EFU land. Bill 282 would rectify that, so I urge approval. The second is that DLCD has indicated support for wedding events on EFU land, but only on non-high-value land. In Deschutes County, if a parcel of land is more than 50% irrigated, it is termed high-value land. Since the weddings generally take place near the house on lawns and not on irrigated cropland, this distinction has little practical benefit. I would urge that venues be allowed on EFU land regardless of it being high-value or non-high-value farmland. This type of activity is here to stay. Rejection of this bill will only drive the industry underground. Better to deal with it now so that it can be regulated. Don't deal with issues such as minimum lot size or frequency of events. Paint with a broad brush and give us at the local level the tools we need to make decisions appropriate for us. Thank you. Sorry.
That was a little more than almost done. Ms. Welliver.
Thank you, Chair Nolan and members of the committee. My name is Danielle Welliver. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I will just be brief. You have our full testimony in front of you. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity, though, to present testimony on HB 2882, legislation that would add commercial wedding businesses and other commercial gatherings as a use allowed on exclusive farm use zone. This proposal is not about whether people may marry on a farm. It is about authorizing commercial gatherings, including commercial wedding businesses, as a new use on farmland. There is no limit on the type, frequency, or size of these gatherings in this proposal, and it authorizes new structures without limit to be built for those commercial businesses. This would allow, for example, a concert arena to be constructed and used. The purpose of the EFU zone is to contain conflicts that are costly to Oregon family farmers. It is easy to see fields and pastures as bucolic settings for a wedding, but the EFU zone is at heart an industrial zone. Wedding businesses and other gatherings unrelated to farming do not belong in this zone. So in short, it seems prudent in these times to protect the industry that remains stable, remains in Oregon, and provides safe food and jobs for Oregonians. Few industries can make these claims. Each weakening of farmland protections converts to less profit for Oregon families that make their living off the land. Respectfully, we ask that you do not support this legislation.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Gindelsberg.
Chairman Nolan, members of the committee, my name is James Gindelsberger. I'm from Deschutes County. On the legal side of this, the Land Use Board of Appeals has heard many, many cases under private park. And though they state there's no definitive definition in Oregon law, they've sort of come to the conclusion under Tice versus Josephine, Utsi versus Coos County, Spearing versus Yamhill, Tennant versus Polk, that a park is a tract of land set aside for public recreation. Now, it doesn't seem that these wedding venues or commercial gatherings are either recreational or public. I also want to quote from a letter. Well, I won't quote it. You have a letter that Governor Kuligowski wrote in 2007 to the legislature stating that let Big Look do its job. We have so many ad hoc changes. In 73, there were 6 uses allowed on farmland, and when he wrote that letter, there were only over 50 uses allowed on farmland. We have something else going in process, Big Look. Let's let them do their job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Harry Catranos, Leslie Catranos, and Nicole Stevens. And then I have only 2 more people to testify, so if there's anyone who isn't on this list yet, please make yourself known. The last 2 people are Earl Bowerman and Art Slack.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Harry Catranos, and I am an agricultural landowner in Deschutes County, and I'm opposed to HB 2882. Oregon benefits tremendously from the agricultural economic base. Increasing urban pressures threatens to destroy that base and a way of life. We do not need to add more uses that erodes the primary purpose of agricultural lands and causes commercialization against land use goals. I did not understand until my home was impacted by 2 non-permitted event venues, and it became a living hell for the past 2 years. One was next door, and the other, the McDonald's, just over a third of a mile away. The traffic and the noise from these events have destroyed the enjoyment of my property I purchased over 20 years ago after I researched the land uses allowed in the area. Windows vibrate from amplified noise, and we take our life in hands traversing rural roads due to the traffic congestions, drinking and driving caused by these events. Sleep has been impossible every weekend from May until late September due to the noise of these events. Livestock production is impacted as well as wildlife. This legislature is a commercial business and does not belong as a park use on agricultural lands. I urge you to preserve our land use goals. Mr. Downs just testified about the farmers market out on Highway 20 in Deschutes County, and that is currently under code enforcement. Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to testify. Ms. Katrinas?
Dear Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Leslie Katrinas, and I'm opposed to this bill. I am an agricultural landowner in Deschutes County. My family agricultural roots go back to the pioneers that came west and settled in Oregon. I know the consequences of these event centers. The impacts and unintended consequences are just too great and far-reaching. I also know what it's like to lose a family farm. We did so when I was a kid. What this bill proposes is commercial business on EFU lands. It is selling a service, a location to hold commercial events that have impacts felt long distances. The enjoyment of my home was taken by two non-permitted event centers. I can no longer enjoy a quiet family gathering, hear the coyotes howl, or frogs croak. I am forced to listen to obnoxious party noise instead. I have to choose between the stress of heat or the stress of noise and lack of ventilation when making decisions on how best to care for my livestock, which are rabbits. I know that many people wish to have commercial business, subdivide lands. Oregonians discovered that Measure 37 was not good. Measure 49 showed that Oregonians wish to stop the urban attacks. Our governor has asked that our lands be protected. And I found Matt Cyrus's testimony on the school bill interesting, as the reasons he presented for it are many of the same we argue against allowing HB 2882. I have prepared a picture board along with a list of impacts as part of my testimony today. With limited time to speak, I beg you to please look at the picture board as you consider this bill and the impacts it will have on our agricultural lands. Please protect our precious resource from urban commercialization. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have now or in the future as you consider this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, and I appreciate your putting together this evidence. Ms. Stevens.
Hi, my name is Nicole Stevens. Good afternoon, Chair Noland and committee members. I live in Bend, Oregon, in Deschutes County. I am opposed to HB 2882. I am a citizen that is very concerned that our agricultural lands are being raped by people putting additional uses on lands that are to be protected from urban commercialization. This bill is not good for Oregon and our agricultural lands. It is urbanization, commercialization of them against Oregon land use planning goals. If these activities do not fit under home occupation or mass gathering codes, they should not be in allowed use. Codes were developed to prevent conflict. I and others in Deschutes County have experienced for 2 years the loss of enjoyment of our properties due to these unpermitted event centers. They are much too intensive and invasive to our agricultural lands, and it is impossible to effectively eliminate the conflicts. The draft of this bill opens the door to many unintended consequences. Music festivals, NASCAR races, motorcycle rallies. The door is wide open. Will the event venue operators push the park use even further since ERTs are allowed on private parks? You betcha. The unpermitted event center near us provides a room for the bride and groom's wedding night. So who is going to monitor and enforcement of these event centers? Resources can only be so stretched so far. I really don't believe that these belong in private parks since they are commercial businesses. Commercial business unrelated to agricultural belong in areas that have been zoned for them and not as private parks. Please preserve our agricultural lands for their intended purpose. Thank you. And do you have any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. I don't think so. I appreciate it. Oh, we do have a question. Representative
Please,
Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Please tell me how much property each one of you own.
5 1/3.
We own it jointly. And those are my parents. 5 1/3.
Okay, thank you.
Earl Bowerman, Art Slack. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill who hasn't signed up yet? Okay. Gentlemen. Mr. Bowerman.
Chairman Nolan and committee members, my name is Earl Bowerman. I reside in Deschutes County. I am also an EFU owner and an event owner and hosted weddings in the past 2 years. I'm here to speak on behalf of HB 2882. And let's be clear, the language in HB 2882 is specific to weddings. It's not a wide open commercial gauntlet, as you've heard earlier. And Deschutes County has, in the last 15 years, allowed these religious weddings on EFU properties, mostly because the destination resorts have been booked, and there was a business need, a supply and demand need, and so these little businesses cropped up, and people wanted to enjoy the beautiful panoramic cascade views that we have from the Bend side. Now that Bend has become a destination resort area, in fact, just today it was announced that Bend was the fastest number 5 growing city in the nation. But we've also become the second largest wedding destination in the Northwest, only behind Columbia River Gorge. These events typically in Deschutes County take place between the fair weather months, May through September, on EFU property. They do generate typically between the 10 event centers that we know about, somewhere between $3 to $7 million a month between those 5 months. These events also support 13 locally owned businesses, business industries, such as you heard earlier, catering, equipment rental, DJs, pastors, wedding planners, cake bakers, and in the flowering industry. And not to mention the hotels and the restaurant revenue that's coming into Deschutes County, which certainly helps our tourism tax base. The state already allows in-state statute private parks in EFU properties, including all overlays. That's already in the EFU statute. Deschutes County, about a year ago, sent out 5,500 letters inviting EFU owners to come and participate in this text amendment that you heard earlier testimony on. Is that for me?
That's for you.
Oh.
Can you wrap it up in a sentence or two?
I guess to wrap it up, basically, we do want to align to the existing outdoor mass gathering stipulations that you heard about earlier. And to give some data, there were 80 letters of opposition out of 5,500 letters that went out and over 450 of support. So we'd like to see the state take a leadership role and help the counties give some guidelines so we can fix this.
Thank you. Mr. Slack.
Chair Nolan and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here today to express some concern with regard to the passage of House Bill 2882. The concern is from a couple of different perspectives at this point. First, we're concerned about putting weddings and other commercial gatherings in the definition of private park. It would seem to us that it would be better if you're going to do this that it should stand alone as a separate classification rather than include it within the definition of private park. Secondly, weddings and other commercial gatherings is a very broad term that needs to be defined. Otherwise, we're going to be looking at 36 counties with 36 different interpretations of what is included here. And I would just submit to you, that's why we're here today, is because 36 counties, given without specific requirements or guidance or criteria within state statute, 36 counties come up with different interpretations. And you've heard a lot from Deschutes County that they interpret a little bit different than other counties do at this point. I would submit to you that ORS 433735 is where a lot of counties look at, let's say, outdoor weddings. That's the outdoor mass gathering legislation that's in statute today, and that, by and large, provides the framework for at least many counties to look at outdoor mass gathering or outdoor gatherings that are not in buildings, and from what I've been hearing today. So those are the two major things or concerns that we have at this point. I would note that I testified in the Senate recently about a Senate bill very similar. Senator Metzger had an amendment to limit his bill only to structures on EFU land that was on the historic register. So that really wouldn't, if that amendment went into his bill, it wouldn't really address some of the things here. But I would submit to you, a lot of this is really up to a local control and a local interpretation, and that's probably how it should be. But if we were to look at a standalone provision, and we were looking at trying to define other commercial activities, then I think maybe there's something to work with here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick question.
Yeah, quick question.
Mr. Representative Black,
So your member counties each have a different interpretation, or among all the counties, is there two or three different interpretations?
Chair Nolan, Representative Hanna, there are probably two or three different interpretations. I wouldn't suggest that there are 36, because some people use the outdoor mass gathering. Some people have done some other things. But again, this is where you have the ability for local control and local interpretation. And as you can see, you get different interpretations from around the state by various counties looking at some of these issues at this point.
Thank you. Last call. Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2882? Before you go, Vice Chair Esquivel, would you help us enter into the record written testimony we've received, some of which came from people who testified, but
Can
quite
we get
a bit.
Them all?
Well, I was going to ask Representative Hanna to read the other half. They're all from Deschutes County, so we don't need to read the county.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'd like to enter into the record written testimony submitted by the following: Richard and Karen Ballou, Evan Brody, Samantha Bronson, Debbie Byers, Carrie and Mark Christensen, Carrie and Deborah Downs, Megan Ellsworth, Brad and Shannon Everett, Jim spoke, Linda Hickman, Gary Hughes, Eileen Karpstein, Judy Knapp, Jim Loudon, Ann Martin, David McDonald, Josh O'Brien, Kim Porter, Rob Schmidt, Melena Schaefer, David Wingant, and David Wilkins.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in addition, the following were received as written testimony from residents of Deschutes County: Gladys Biglore, Jen Boyer, Rick and Marcia Briggs, Kelly Brown, Kirsten Cheatham, Rick and Mary Coffin, Suzanne Dial, Dan Dubay, John and Janine Fuqua, Brad and Carrie Hester, Alan Hustis, Jane Jenkins, Harry Kentris, M. K. Knott, Lorcid McCree, Matt Cyrus, Jeff and Julianne Myers, Lindsay Pearson, Denise Riley, Lewis and Carla Settle, Donna Tressel, Ed Whitelaw, and Elizabeth Wilson.
Thank you. I really appreciate the effort you took to come and testify, and the ability for people to come and testify and listen to each other, even as we have different opinions on this bill. Colleagues, thanks for your attention to this as well. I will close the public hearing and adjourn the committee. Thank you.